I guess it's time, right? So everybody in this room already got their Slate devices, since you're not standing in a 2.5 hour lane and watching a back of someone else. How many of you got the Slate devices? That's cool. Yeah, the Surface Pro and the Surface RT. I have four Microsoft people asking me to buy their stuff because they can't do it that cheap. My name is Michael, and everybody calls me Mike, so it's going to be perfectly fine. I'm from Sweden, which is over there. I work around the globe, do deployment for Windows, for clients, for servers. Been doing this since 8-inch floppies. Anybody remember those? Yep. And CDC drives, like disk packs. Really funny. I'm a trainer, I'm a consultant, I'm an MVP, and they changed the name, but I used to be a setup and deployment MVP. Now the name is so long I can't even pronounce it. There is a hashtag on Twitter for this session. It's only monitored by me, but if you do have any questions that you couldn't figure out during the session or during the session, because I want to try to monitor at the same time, the easiest way, Twitter, that hashtag, and I will respond to you as soon as possible, which means after this session, most likely. So the number one question is, of course, why are we here? And I guess most of you are here because VDI is something you either are doing and you want to check if you missed something, or you're supposed to do VDI, or you couldn't find another room to sit and relax and play with the Surface Pro device. And we're going to try to answer all those questions except for the last Pro device. The reason why we need to spend some time in this, I mean, Microsoft is improving over years, right? I mean, if we go like trying to do a VDI solution in NT4, I didn't even try that. But you know, it boots fast. Huh? You can't use it for anything except for the Flipper game, which is kind of ugly in 16 colors. But it has improved. So if we take Windows 8, for instance, it's pretty much okay to do VDI. I mean, if I don't do anything at all, it's okay. Like buying a Volvo. It's okay. But it's a really boring car. So we could do something to improve it. We could improve many different things, and we're going to talk about these different subjects. We could improve performance. That's one thing. Improving overhead is another thing. Improving usability. I just invented that word. Making it looking nice and easy. And we also have different scenarios. And VDI is kind of, you know, we do VDI. And I usually ask, which kind? And they go like, what do you mean, what kind? Are there many flavors? Yeah, we have the personalized and we have the pooled ones. And we don't really create their image, or we tune the image anything like one or the other. A pooled machine is supposed to live for 15 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, maybe, I don't know, a day, but it has a limited lifetime. Do we really patch those machines at all? I mean, do we have an antivirus? Maybe, maybe not. It depends what the purpose of the machine is. If you have a personalized machine, well, when then it becomes close to be your personal PC. Hospitals, doctors. I love the question when they go like, oh, we need to be able to log on faster. Why? Because the doctors is running around in different workstation. Takes too long to log on. We're using roaming profiles, and they have all the documents on the desktop. Yeah, that's going to kill one or the other. So that's not really a great thing to do. So they should shift into VDI, but most likely doing a personalized VDI is going to be the best thing for them because they really need a personal computer. But if you're working at, I don't know, Wendy's, and you sell hamburgers, and that is a machine that is supposed to just sell stuff. Well, then you log on, you sell whatever you're supposed to sell, and then you're done. And then we can use the pool machines. We also need to think about thin versus thick images. Another story. I mean, if I do a thin image, then I need to apply all the applications after the image has been booted up, which could be convenient because that is, it could be faster. Could also be slower. It totally depends. Should we do app V and stream down the application, or should we put them inside? Those are decisions that needs to be made, and after that is made, then we need to figure out how to do that the best way. I prefer to do thin images when I do physical deployment, because that is more flexible. But when I do VDI, that might not be very practical. I need to download all the application. If I'm going to download the application 10,000 times, they're going to consume space. And that's going to cost network, it's going to cost disk, and it's going to cost enormously amount of disk I/O. And the only thing that is very precious, at least for me in the data center, is IOPS. That's the only thing I can't have enough of. The rest of the stuff, I don't really care so much. Pooled them versus personal, we talked about that, but it's really important that whenever you reference images or your images they're supposed to use, you really need to say, this is a pooled VDI image. Therefore, all the focus I have is going to be on that. And you need also to define, let's say that you exclude the antivirus application. Well, okay, that's fine. So how do we protect the machine? Oh, we have a big firewall. Yeah, that's not really going to work. But it could be in an isolated network. It could be used for a certain amount of traffic. It could be something that blocks traffic to these machines because they only need to access something through a proxy. That could work. Or maybe we don't do the antivirus. Okay, so how do we deal with that? Should we use maybe AppLocker to lock it down, and therefore we don't need an antivirus at all? And I mean, do I really install antivirus on every system I have? Well, that used to be a policy in most companies. It usually takes 10 minutes to explain for them what you can do with an antivirus program to hack your system, and then say, well, maybe we shouldn't have one because it seems to be more secure to be without one. Yeah, sometimes it is. So we need to fix that. You also need to make a decision about 32 and 64, and this has to do with capacity, storage, the type of application. Automatically, it feels like, 64, that really feels better. Yep, it does, but it also consumes about 2.2 gigabytes more on an image. So therefore, it consumes space. Also, if you only run 32-bit application, maybe you only have one. It's a line of business application. It is a 32 or a 16-bit application or something nasty. Well, in that case, what's the point of running 64? Then you can't run the 16-bit at all, but if you're running 32, it's going to be kind of emulated anyhow, so it will be a bit of an overhead, which is no use. Well, many of these things I've talked about so far is politics. You need to understand when you speak with consultants, you read a blog post, you ask someone that works at Microsoft, they have opinions. Opinions that is based on, I don't like 32 or I don't like 64. So you really need to figure it out on your own by testing, verifying, and when the number says, this makes sense because I really save space, CPU, memory, and I/O. If that happens to be a 64-bit image and the consultant you ask say, oh, no, you should do 32, then it's politics. And I can't argue with that. I can argue with many things, but politics is something I can't really have an argument with because it's pointless. Anybody have those discussions that after a while you feel that this is pure politics? Never happens, right? No. We shouldn't have a local firewall. We should have a central firewall. It protects the earth. Sorry. You need to pick the right edition for Windows. And most people don't really believe there's any differences, but it is actually some small minor differences between different SKUs. Remote app, Windows 8 Enterprise. Multitouch, all of them except Windows 7, of course. Remote FX, USB plug and play redirection, user profile disk, remote FX, virtual graphics processing. This is functions. Then we have the other small thing that is called licensing, which means that I want to do VDI. Okay, so what version do you have? I have the pro version. Okay, then you need to buy an extra license. Yeah, what's the price of that? Twice the amount that you already paid for. So if you upgrade to software assurance, it's going to be much cheaper. No, I don't want to have an agreement. Okay, well, then you need to pay for it. So you really need to have a software assurance, and if you do have a software assurance, then you get the enterprise version. Anyhow, so there is both a technical reason and there is a licensing reason, and there's a cost reason. I'm not picky about this. I never pay for the license. Anyhow, it's my customer that pays, and if they feel for paying twice the amount of money, I just realize I don't need to be that efficient when I work for the customer. Obviously, they have a lot of money. There's one small issue with this. I would put it like this. I've been doing Windows for many years. I mean, I started out when Windows was, I think the first Windows I actually did a professional install was 2.something. It was horrible. You bought a scanner, and then the only way to scan a document was to install a runtime version of Windows. In black and white. Gray. And I do both client and servers. Now, when I look at every major company, there is a brick wall between the server guys and the client guys. That brick wall is like the Berlin Wall. It's, you know, you can't pass it. Either you are a server guy or you're a client guy. Then we have the networking guys. They live on another planet, of course. And then we have the storage guys, and they, I don't know where they are. But we do have all these problems. And the problem is that the VDI solution, it's a cross-platform. Hey, it's a client running on a server. Who's going to do the image? Who is going to be responsible for this? Oh, it's going to be the server guys. You mean the guys that have no idea on how to deploy machines efficiently at all because they run around with a DVD and a piece of paper with a PID key? I'm not kidding you. This is like 1 year ago, 12 months, okay? I'm in a data center, and they have giant posters on the concrete walls in the end of every hallway with the product key for every server operating system. They had, when I was there, about 2,500 physical machines, and they were running around with a DVD. Yeah, they are a hosting provider in Europe. Never ever move your servers to Europe because then you know what you're paid for. People are running around in the data center. They actually had a lunch in the data center because they had too much to do. So I've seen that, and I couldn't believe my eyes. And then I walk up to the client guys, and they are responsible for like 15,000 machines, and they are one. And he do it all. So even if you're a server guy, then you really need to learn from the client guys on how to do this. On the other hand, if you're only a client guy, you need to understand how the server side works too to get that solution that really works. I work on both sides. For me, it's not client or server. For me, it's Windows. It's pretty much the same thing. I remember the advanced server that was an extra floppy. It used to be put it in. Now it's a domain controller. Okay, what's the difference? You can have accounts. Okay, thank you. What we need to have is some kind of solution that creates reference image. If you do a pooled machine, you need to recreate the image very often. Every day, every week, month, I don't know. That's, you know, what you have decided. And doing it manually? Anybody had a manual process that ever worked for more than a month? Are we doing backup? Is it scheduled? No, we do it manually. Yeah. Do you have a backup? Think so. I hand it over to someone else. Yeah, right. So we need to have some kind of standardization. We need to have some kind of automation. And depending on what solution we have, it might take time. System Separation Machine Manager, which supposed to be a really nice solution, doesn't really have a solution to create our reference images. They have a recommendation that you should install Windows, do whatever you're supposed to do, and then you say, store this, and then it will run sysprep with some parameter that is unspecified and some settings that nobody has told me. So I have no idea what's going on. I can use Configuration Manager, but in that case, I can only deploy that with Configuration Manager. I could use an unattended XML file just to have a ISO booting up and do a manual capture, but that is a manual process. And modifying and tweaking an unattended XML file is not enough. We also need to do other things. Well, I can do most of that with PowerShell. Yeah, but now we are into the problem. You need to first do this, and then this, and then this, and then this, and it needs to be a piece of paper, everything. So that's kind of horrible. I'm going to check on the solution pretty soon. You also need to figure out the sizes of all these disks. How big should they be? When you do servers, it's kind of easy, but when you do clients, depends. This is sizes that I've picked up from internet. My personal choice is for pooled machines to be pretty much 40, and for personal machines, I do 60. And then someone complains and says, I can't store the data on my personal VDI machine. That is correct. You shouldn't. That's why we have file servers. So it shouldn't have more than room for application, room for synchronization with like SkyDrive Pro, something like that. Maybe they have something that needs to be synchronized because it's easier to do that for them. But I don't want to have the entire file system on those machines. Application, of course, and performance also needs to be under consideration. An application, most of the applications can be virtualized today. There's no problem with that. However, some of them might not be able to be sysprepped, or they don't survive a sysprep. Therefore, we cannot easily put them in the base image. Maybe we need to add that application later on, and that might be appv. You know, the biggest problem with this, the application part, is that even if I can make it work, and I have no issues, and my users has no issues, and the customer is really happy, the company that provides the application doesn't support virtualization. They don't support VDI, it doesn't support virtualization, it doesn't support to be run on anything else but a laptop from Dell. That's what they support. And I think that has to do with the simple fact that the vendor behind the application cannot control the entire process, and they don't really have the time, money, and effort to test it. Therefore, it's easier for them to say, we don't support it. Therefore, if you're going to do a fully supported environment, which is supported from you, from Microsoft, if you use their solution, Windows, and the vendor, I guess you're going to have no application at all. Or maybe some of the App Store. Cut the rope. I think that's supported. Not sure, though. I haven't verified it yet. So you really need to think of this. Do I need a vendor's support? Or am I large enough to call the vendor and say, you know, I don't really care if you support me or not. You're going to do that. Otherwise, we're going to stop paying the money. And then you're out of business. You could try to put the pressure on them. I know customers that has done it successfully. It's just a matter of how big you are. I wouldn't mention any names, but in Redmond, there are a couple of major companies, Microsoft being one of them. But there are others, too, that uses Microsoft products. I guess they can just take a cab ride up to Redmond and say, you know, we need help with this. Oh, it doesn't support that. Uh-huh. So if you just fix my machine right now, I will be happy to continue my journey. And they're going to do that because they are bigger and they provide a lot of money they earn. Disk size, 64-bit consumes more, and that's it. Now, how many of you were on the keynote this morning? Yeah, okay, so you heard about the new features of data deduplication that you can do underneath. In that case, if you do on it on Server 2012 R2, we use VHDX files across the network and they are on a dedupe drive, this doesn't really matter at all. But if you're going to do it on 2012 right now, it does matter, and depending on how many machines you have, of course. The antivirus software, I've seen so many solutions, and it's hard to recommend any specific. It really depends. If you want to do pretty much like a standardized, small VDI solution, I would say don't do any kind of specialized modification. Let it be as it is, as long as it doesn't consume the resources you have. But as soon as you start to scale out, you need to reconsider that choice. I've seen VDI solutions from like a couple of hundred machines up to thousands of machines, and when you do like 50 at the same time, it really doesn't matter that much. In this case, we can either run the agent inside as usual, or we can have it outside and we can pre-scan before we start it up. We can also turn the machine off on a regular basis and scan the machine when it's offline because it's a personal machine and it's not available 24 hours, so we have a maintenance hour every, I don't know, in the middle of the night. Nobody works except for IT pros. Antivirus and other application will affect logon, so you really need to be sure that that doesn't affect you too much. It affects I/O, it affects performance, of course. One of the tools I use when I've done my image, that means I've done it, I logged on as a user, I poked around in it like a user would. It's a tool from SysInternals called Autoruns. That will reveal many of those nasty applications that run in the background. And then I figure out which one of those really needs to run. Do I need them at all? Are they helper application? I guess some of you have heard about Adobe, and they have something called Acrobat Reader. It's a nice application. It also checks for updates on a regular basis, like every 8 seconds. Which is good, because there might be a new version. That is the release rate they have. They already stepped up to the Microsoft level of releasing faster release cycles. No, I'm just kidding, they're not. But they are checking that, so maybe you want to turn that off. And most of these small utilities that people, you know, free software, there's a lot of these checking behind. Another great tool to use, however, it's a bit harder, it's the performance tools from the ADK. The performance tools from ADK can measure a boot. There are sessions during this week, so if you can't see them because you're on another session, please watch them when you get back because they're going to be recorded. They are really nice from that factor that you can really measure the boot time and go through every application. We don't need to deal with drivers. That's not going to be an issue. But we need to deal with application that boots up. Then you can see how long time does that application actually takes. How much resources does it really consume? Is it the first time only, or will it be a consecutive consummation of resources? So, that said, I guess that's my machine. This is nothing fancy at all. This is my standard lab machine. It has all kinds of stuff on it. I also have some pointless applications. I guess auto run starts with an A. And even if this is like nothing, because it's a server, the only thing I have is like, standard helper application, Java, some plugins, Office, otherwise it's a server 2012. But you can see, oh, Adobe Reader, yeah. Yeah, that one. It even tries to start Windows Mail for the purpose of settings. We have broadband, Lync, SkyDrive, Spotify, since I'm listening to music. If you go through this, you can see this is what's running during logon. This is the plugins for IE. Here's the scheduled tasks. The fun thing you can see with this, sometimes you can see this red ones. That means that most likely that path doesn't exist. So it's trying to start something that doesn't exist anymore. And that happens pretty often. Let's say that you're installing something, you uninstall it, and then you install it again. The link to the old application wasn't removed when you uninstalled it. It's still there. So it tries to start something that doesn't exist, and that consumes time, of course. So how many of you are playing with autoruns today? Some of you? Yeah? Do you find it useful? So what you should do is that you should use this after you have deployed your image to verify that it doesn't make any more noise than what it really needs to. We need to modify the unattended XML file, and now there's two different things. I mean, we could do Windows 8 or Windows 7. And since I don't work for Microsoft, I don't really care what people do as long as they don't do XP or Vista. I actually had a customer ask me if I can help them update their Vista deployment. And I said, yeah, we can do that for Windows 7. No, we just want to modify the deployment process for Vista. We're going to keep on using that. I had some opinion about that. One of the settings you can use in the unattended XML file for especially Windows 7, and you could use it for Windows 8 too, is called Do Not Clean Up Non-Persistent Devices. When you do a sysprep and you do a generalize, what happens is that it throws out all the drivers. It makes sense when you do a physical machine. Does it really make sense when you do a virtual machine? Nope. There's no point of doing a plug-and-play rescan because we're going to run it on the same hardware. Therefore, if you are creating your reference images in the same virtual environment that you're going to run on, you can enable the Do Not Clean Up Persistent Devices, which means it's going to keep all the drivers. Together with Persist All Device Installs, because there's two settings here. One is to keep all the drivers, and the other one is to not detect new ones. These two together will shorten down the start time for a fresh image about 50%. It's about half the time. That is the first boot up, because it's not going to do the discovering devices and do a reboot, because it's just going to boot and then it's done. There are other things that will take longer time, but especially when you do Windows 7 and you don't have any kind of start menu application thingy, it just boots up. So the boot time in total on a Windows 7 machine, I think I measured that, is like 1 minute and 10 seconds, and then you can log on. So it's really fast. So you could do this. There's another setting you might want to use when you do images. This is a general setting, many different images, but one of the things we might need to do is to modify the profile. We need to have the following settings, the following configuration. And instead of trying to figure out how to do a script at logon time for each user, I can pre-configure the administrator profile and keep a copy of that. So when the user logs on at the first time, he's going to inherit the local administrator profile. Therefore, we could use copy profile. That is the only supported way to modify the profile itself. It is possible to do other use other methods, like opening the profile using regedit and poke around at it, but this is really correct. However, there's a small issue. The text they have on TechNet that describes this is incorrect. It is a bug in the text. We filed a bug on the text, and that's going to be updated until with the next release of Windows. So the text will be correct for Windows 8.1. It states that you should run copy profile in the setting when you create your image. That is incorrect. Copy profile should be in the unattended XML file on the machine after it has been sysprepped and boots up. Otherwise, it has no use. There are many blog posts around this, so that will be explained in many different locations. So let's flip into WSIM. That's the wrong computer, I guess. Let's take that one instead. Yeah, better. So Windows System Image Manager is the trick to do all these things. So let's find persistent, and we're going to find that here, persist all devices. And if we, it's actually highlighted here, it's just hard to find, that is. Put in the specialized face, and then you flip these to true. And I'm glad Johan is not here, because if Johan were here, he would slap my head. He always do that when I forget about the Summit utility. So these are the settings to keep the drivers and do not redetect the plug and play stuff, which helps performance when you fire up. We also have the copy profile. And I can actually type copy. And that should be, where is it? Oh, there it is. It's a specialize. And you need to enable that to true. Sometimes when you do have settings in the unattended XML file and you're supposed to tweak things, you find a really cool setting, you can add it in different faces. The face that applies to you is going to be the specialized face. Everything you put in the generalized face will be configured when you do a sysprep generalize. But when that machine powers on first time, it's going to do the specialized face again. Therefore, there's no really a point of having anything at all in generalize. You can put everything in specialize, and then you instead have two unattended XML files, one for creating the reference image, and you're going to have another one, depending on what solution you're using, that solution will provide an unattended XML file for you, and that will be used anyhow. So this is how you do that. The Windows System Image Manager is a part of the Wake toolkit, so you really need to have a Wake toolkit, or sorry, an ADK toolkit. Otherwise, that's going to be hard to use at all. For Windows 8, there's a new sysprep command line, node, colon, VM. I had some bad experience with it. I also had some success with it. So, but in some cases, when we've done certain settings using the unattended XML file, and we use the mode VM, when you power on that machine, it never boots. It just continues to wait forever. I've been trying to pin it down, but I haven't found it yet. So I'm not telling you not to use it. You should absolutely try to use this. This pretty much do the same thing, like persistent devices. So it's going to keep devices for Windows 8. But for Windows 7, this doesn't exist. Therefore, if you do an image in Windows 7, you really need to do the persist all devices and to avoid a redetection of drivers. Yeah, we can do that. Did I have number two or three? I had two. And I'm not going to sysprep my server right now. Yeah, I've done that, so, you know, that wasn't even close to fun. That was horrible. But I have already done that. And we're going to do a snapshot on that machine. One of the small issues you have, this depends, but depending on solution you use for creating your reference image, there might be leftovers, right? There might be an unattended XML file laying around somewhere. Shouldn't be a problem. Depending on what solution you use when you deploy your virtual machines, the VDI solution itself, that will provide an unattended file. Shouldn't be a problem. But it is a problem when you have two files in two different locations, because the sysprep process has a list of what folder it will check first. So in the case of using MDT and LightTouch, that's going to end up with a text file in the Panther folder. And when you use Virtual Machine Manager to build it, they're going to provide an unattended XML file on the floppy drive. Now we have two. And the floppy drive doesn't win. So you really need to make sure that you don't have any leftovers. Best thing you can do is to remove the folder called Panther, which is inside Windows. In this case, you can see this, and you can see there's an unattended XML file over here. This is a leftover, shouldn't be inside that file, folder at all. When we do sysprep capture, create WIM files in different solutions, all those solutions remove this folder. But when you just install it and run sysprep and shut down, it has no mechanism to remove it. So that needs to be removed either manually or mounting the VHD after it has been installed. In this case, we have another unattended XML in the root, which happens to be the deployment solution that puts this file here to configure the machine. But these settings never applies because we have two unattended files and they are processed in the incorrect order. You see that you have something called mode, and mode only applies to VM. So if we want to do this, then we can do a generalized out-of-the-box experience. And then you can do a quit, and then you can do a shutdown or your shutdown directly. This is how you need to sysprep the machine to use the VM function. There is no checkboxes or anything for VM. It needs to be run from a command line. Otherwise, it doesn't work. These slides will be up, so you can download them. Some of these are stolen from the MMS sessions. But basically, you could or you should disable a whole bunch of them. Now, some of these are manual. And when I talk with IT guys, they go like, oh, I don't need to disable a manual service. I mean, it's manual. It's never going to be started. Says who? It's just not started automatically. So, briefly, application layer gateway service, that is never needed in a VDI environment. Since we don't have any mobile broadbands in them. Bits might be needed, depending on infrastructure, agent, applications, but otherwise that's also gone. We don't need BitLocker. We certainly don't need Bluetooth. We might need branch cache. That totally depends if you're using branch cache. Otherwise, you can turn that off too. Computer browser, device association, device setup manager, we don't need them. Just disable them. Diagnostics, policy service, services, host, all the diagnostic systems. You don't really need that. You don't really need diagnostics. It's a VDI environment. And if a user have a problem, they're going to call help desk. If they are using the diagnostics, what do you think the likeliness of the diagnostic services will be able to fix anything at all? Oh, it seems that your network adapter don't have an IP address. Well, using a remote desktop to access it, so using the, I'm going to reset your IP address on this machine, not going to work. Link tracking, we don't need that. Encrypting file system, all that stuff. Family safety, I mean, oh. Fax, function, the home group stuff, ICS, go aways. iSCSI doesn't consume anything, but there's a reason why we disable that. Otherwise, there's a small chance that someone is very, well, they, you know, users play around. I like two users, the ones that doesn't know anything at all because they are scared. So they don't do anything else than exactly what they are told. And I really like the user that knows everything, you know, IT pros, because they don't do mistakes. I hate the fact when they are a user, but they think they are an IT pro. Those are the dangerous ones. It's like, oh, iSCSI, I can do things. And they start connecting and, oh. So we want to remove that, otherwise it's kind of horrible. Network list search, we don't need that. Offline files, we don't need that. Optimized drives, we can turn that off for two. SNMP, SSDP, phone, themes, depends. Totally depends. I mean, it's okay to turn it off, right? But on the other hand, your VDI experience will now be pretty boring. But it depends on the purpose. It's a point of sales machine, and they don't have themes. I think they can survive. They're going to just type in the number of dollars they're going to sell something for anyhow. The backup, color, all that stuff. Defender, well, this comes to the should we or should we not have the AV in the image or not. Windows 8 does have an antivirus system in itself. It's called Defender. You might want to turn it off. If you do, you save not much memory, but you save a bit I/O. Reporting, search. Search is, even if it's search is good, it's really optimized, it really consumes because it's going to index files and it's consuming memory. And as soon as you start loading up other things like Outlook, Office, it starts to index all those files too. Now, that is okay, but the worst thing with index service is that a user, if they're using personal VDIs, they can go and say like, oh, I want to index the file shares over at this server too. And I want to index the entire planet so I can, you know, it's indexed. You don't want to have that. That's going to be a red button. You don't want to turn that machine off. Sorry, you lost connectivity. Yeah, you killed the network. Then you turn off the other things too. Event log size, especially when you do the pooled machines, you can shoot them down to just be barely covering an hour or so, then just wiped and cleaned. There's no point of having them. Hard disk timeout, that is really important to modify. I'm going to show you how to do that later on. But you really need to do that, especially when you do Windows XP Vista and even Windows 7, because the timeout is by default assuming you're running on a local physical hard drive, and you're not. And that comes to the fact, because I've seen this and it's so funny, the first time we ever did a VDI solution for Windows 7, we had no idea what, you know, we were doing actually. But it was funny, and the customer built it, and we were playing around with it, and we forgot to do the tweaking. We just, you know, basic standard image, and the SAN storage went crazy in the middle of the night because every machine was doing the defragmentation. It's like, oh my God. That was funny. But we also have the problem where if you're running personal machines, then they are rebooting. That has been better, but in some cases I've seen administrators that has a scheduled external reboot. I'm going to reboot all the machines externally at the same time. Well, that's going to be fine. Firing them up at the same time, that's going to kill the network and the SAN and storage, and everybody will be very, very angry. We can disable a bunch of services that we don't need, or you can modify them to work differently. Maybe you want to have that service still, so instead of disabling it, you set it to have no schedule. And then you can use PowerShell if you really want to do this. It could be a cleanup job that is scheduled, but you don't want to do it monthly or daily or something like that. You want to do it when you feel for it. So then you still have the task, but it doesn't have a schedule. Then you can use the PowerShell script remotely to connect all the machines and power it up. So the tool I use, and I will avoid trying to be political here, but the tool I use is called Microsoft Deployment Toolkit. It's nothing fancy, really. It's a tool that has been around for a long time. But it's a good tool to create reference images. The nice thing is that it creates generic reference images, and you can tweak and you can modify and you can do it basically whatever you like. How many of you are today familiar with Microsoft Deployment Toolkit? Some of you. Yeah. Works? Hard to learn? Not too bad. No, it takes a while. At least 5 or 10 minutes. No. It takes a longer time than that. So I'm not going to cover MDT because MDT is covered during the sessions, but basically it is a file share on the server or on the client, and in this tool we add all the applications we would like to have. In this case, I have a bunch of applications. All of them are not actually applications. Some of them are configuration. I use the method in MDT as if it was an application, because then it's movable. I can copy it. I can move it around. I can put it in different locations. And I don't need to worry about where is the script located. How do I move it from another server? So as long as it's an application, it's easy to enable and disable. But it's not really an application. I have an application that actually removes the unattended XML file. I also have another app that configures the VDI things. We have the operating system. We don't need any drivers. When it comes to patches, you have two options. Either you use WSUS, you have a WSUS server, you point the deployment solution to grab the patches from there. It's going to pick everything that is unknown, everything that is configured as an unknown computer. Those patches it will pick up, right? If you don't want to do that, because you don't control that server, someone else is doing, and you want to control the patches, well, then you import them into packages, and they will be installed the same way. Another reason to use packages is there is a patch that solves a specific issue, and you cannot get that from WSUS, because you need to go into the secret website at Microsoft, type in the secret password and code, and get the secret patch that fixed the secret problem that secretly doesn't exist. And then you can import the packages here, or language packs if you want to do that too. And then just create your reference images. And a normal reference image looks like this pretty much. Nothing fancy. We install the application we're supposed to install, and it has steps for imaging. But here's the VDI solution. So if we check this out, I didn't modify anything in the beginning, really. I have two steps that I created. And one is supposed to run before Windows Update, and the other one is supposed to run after Windows Update and after the application has been installed. In this case, you can see that Windows Update is grayed out, and actually the VDI configure is also grayed out because I was playing with this before. The VDI configuration, well, you can do this in two ways. And I'm not going to tell you exactly how to, or I want to give you the both options. The most flexible one is to create one command line, one action for everything you want to do. There, you don't have a script. Therefore, you can enable and disable when you poke around, when you play around. You can try different things out by enabling and disabling. The downside of having a script is the fact that, especially when we do VBScript, oh, PowerShell script. Anybody has a VBScript that's like 4 or 5K in size? Yeah. And you modify two lines, and then you run it, and then it doesn't work. And then you spend 2 days of figuring out how many of these you need to make it go even so it works. VBScript is like playing King's Quest. I know what it's supposed to do. It just doesn't get it. I don't like VBScript very much. In this case, I've stolen some of these from another vendor, actually. We run a PowerShell command line. The nice thing about doing it this way is that we don't need to create scripts. Now you can have just a PowerShell command line for every command you're supposed to run. And you see that the execution policy, of course, set to bypass, which means just run it, no questions asked. Therefore, we can, for instance, disable services pretty easy by just running PowerShell set service and then define it, enable and disable. So now we have a pretty flexible environment where we can enable and disable each of the services, and if it doesn't work nice, you enable it, you create a new reference image, and then you try it again. Because I need to be honest with you, when everything is done, creating a reference image, the image, that's really simple. It's the development of figuring out exactly what we need that takes time. Therefore, you need to understand how to cheat. That's the most important thing. How do you cheat? How do you do it fast? How can I test thousands of different configurations in no time? Because I don't really have 2 months to try it again and again. And this is one way of doing it. We can, of course, also modify things like register values by just running the reg key. And there you have, disk timeout value. We can disable and enable a lot of things. One thing that is really nice to enable is remote desktop, otherwise it's kind of hard to. It's not me. It's not me. But it's someone. Disable Windows Sideshow has nothing to do with Windows 8. But you can see that all these tabs here are light green. So if we check that, it says continue on error. So there's two approaches here. Otherwise, I have one section for a Windows 7 and one section for a Windows 8. Or I'm cheating and I have one for everyone. And in some cases, that command will return a failure because that function doesn't exist. Yeah. It's like out null. I don't really care. If it doesn't work, if it doesn't exist, it's not that important. So we turned all these things off. We disabled features like the boot GUI, and there's different settings depending on Windows 7, because that's Windows 8, and that is the old Windows 7 one. I'm not sure that works in Windows 8. I know that one works. You disable restore points, take away all that stuff, disable last access timestamp. We don't need to do it for Windows 8. We do need to do it for Windows 7. But I never removed it. There's a bunch of scheduled tasks that you can disable. In this case, I actually had it enabled for another reason. But you can remove these. It doesn't really matter if you do it command line ways or use PowerShell or if you use a VB script. The purpose is to get it done. That's the most important thing. There, as far as I know, I haven't seen any IT pro that has been up for the Nobel Prize in a nice script. So I don't really care if it's looking nice. For me, it needs to be working and do its purpose. It's fun when you have the discussion with developers. They go like, oh, it's unnecessary code. Yeah, it's going to take 2 milliseconds extra to run. Who cares? But everybody has the right to have an opinion, even me. Then I flip it back. When I've done all the PowerShell stuff, I flip it back so it becomes the default. So it's just that during a time we do that. Another thing you might want to do, I'm not telling you to, but you might want to do, especially for Windows 8, is to remove the applications, the Windows 8 built-in applications. You might want to have them, you might want to remove them. It's not that hard to remove them, actually. Let's see how we can remove that. Let's go into that machine. I think we can, yep, have this. If we click there, here we have all the application. And that's a nice. I mean, it's nice. It's your personal VDI machine. It looks like exactly like your machine. But then you work as a, I don't know, a factory floor, and you're supposed to use the machine temporary for just one purpose. And going around like this makes people annoyed. So with a bit of PowerShell, and we need to change the font size so you can see that. We also need to enable geek mode. Looks better. Something like that. Yep, there we go, geek mode. So if we do a get apps package, you're going to see all the installed application. That's nice. So now we need to remove them. There we go. Yeah, so you can remove all the applications. Close. You can't remove store and you can't remove IE. However, you can disable the store functionality using group policy. But the icon itself, I think I know why you can't remove it, but that's another story, and I'm not going to say this on the recorded session. But there is reasons. So we removed all that. So now we removed all the applications, right? Incorrect. They are not gone. We just removed them from the administrator. We also need to remove the application per se, because these applications are provisioned. Therefore, you run that, and it doesn't work. Nope, because we need to add online. And then we get all the provision package. And of course, we then can remove those. And that also need to have the online switch. Now we are actually removing them. If you really need to have them again, well, then you really need to go out to the store and you need to download them and install them. There's no reason per se just to delete them just because you can. It's all about what is the end user supposed to have in on the desktop when they log on. If it's a pooled machine with a specialized purpose, well, then it might be easier to just have a modified start menu that only has, start screen, sorry, that only has the components we really need to have. It's not going to need to any kind of reboot or restart. It's just going to remove everything. The problem you should be aware of is that if you do keep those applications, there is no way to update them while you create your image. If you do Windows Update and all that stuff, that's never going to cover those applications. So they will be the old original application. I know that's changing in the future, but today you're going to have like 22 applications that is out of date and the user needs to go into the store. And if they're not going to use those applications, it might be a better choice to just remove them. The machine doesn't get faster. Slightly, but it's not important. And the machine itself doesn't consume less space or something like that. It's just that it looks better to have it like this. So we remove the application, which is nice. Let's flip back to the machine again. Where am I? Here I am. So we have that. Then I have another script called VDI Fix. And this is just another sample of how you could do this. And to be honest, someone told me you shouldn't say that, because if you say that, it means that you normally are dishonest. I'm not. I'm always honest. But to be really honest, this is something you can download. This was built by Jonathan Bennett from the beginning with the VDI optimizer that exists for Windows 7. Then it has been modified by other people. And it kind of makes sense to use this, because in this case, it's going to install .NET Framework, but that should be done already, so we don't need to do that at all. It does configure services this way, so you can use this method instead of using the method I had in the task sequences. But it basically disables the same thing, optimizes disk drive services, changes that. So you see, it turns off basically the same thing. In this case, it turns off the Defender things, so you don't have them. Modify hard disk, modify TCP/IP, hibernate, and so on and so on. And it modifies basically all of these other scheduled tasks. But then it does something really cool in the end. It does this. It runs a tool called Clean Manager. And clean manager is the disk right-click clean manager. And you can configure what that is supposed to clean up. But the only way to configure it is to pre-populate the register with values. And that's why we populate everything in the beginning. So we jank in all that stuff. And that means when you run clean manager and you say SAGERUN100, all those register values is specified to that profile. So it will delete everything. Everything that is not needed. That also means old hotfix packs, updates, overwritten files. So it will clean the drive as much as possible. It's really a nice tool to use. But we need to configure it, otherwise it doesn't run all the things we have. And then we have a bunch of user settings that we populate this way. So it's either using a VB script like this, this script you can actually download, or it's putting everything to small pieces in the custom settings.ini. When you are supposed to do tests of this, here is the how you cheat. Here's how you play with this. When you create your image and you have a sequence and you create a boot image, you boot up on the image and you install Windows. Before we actually do the sysprep process, we put in a script called suspend. The suspend step stops the process. It breaks. Now you can take a snapshot of the machine and click resume. And that will end up in having an AVHD file and a VHDX file. Then you merge them together into a new file and you verify that. If that is okay, then you can remove the suspend step. You have a process. If it didn't work correctly, revert, do manual changes, resume, combine, verify. Therefore, I don't need to reinstall Windows and wait 35 minutes just to see, let's see what's new. The mouse pointer goes over here. You seen that movie? It's not really the best movie I've seen, but it's there. With that said, there are also other tracks, of course, things you should watch out for. Wins to Go is another nice thing, another technology. We have Springboard. If you haven't been to Springboard, I strongly recommend Springboard. That is an IT pro perspective from someone that actually knows things about Windows. Stephen Rose is running that site right now, which is a part of TechNet. We have all the other things and evaluations you should do. We have a bunch of resources. This recording will be up on Channel 9. You also do your evaluations on Channel 9 this year, I recently learned, which is kind of strange. You can obviously win something. Oh, that's nice. You can have the geek hat. And I really would like you to evaluate this session. Be gentle, but be honest. I really need feedback from this session. If it was too technical or not too technical, or if I'm just really a horrible person. Yeah, that happens. I think the worst evaluation I ever got was someone that says, the speaker seemed to be drunk. And, I mean, no, really, I don't do that. I don't combine alcohol with being on a stage. I try to avoid that as much as possible. Thank you so much for stopping by to this session. If you do have any questions, I will be over here taking answers until there are no more answers. If they throw it out, I will be outside the session hall. Thank you for stopping by.